Dr. Barnard, you were a student of David Waltz at Tufts University, correct?
Yes, I was.
You already had some familiarity with Illumina's technology by the time the company was formed?
Absolutely. The original patent, Illumina license, came out of my PhD thesis.
Would you say that Dr. Zarnik was the person who identified you as a candidate for Illumina?
No, actually David Walt did.
And Mr. Pantone asked you about your observations of Dr. Zarnik at the Cardiff facilities? Those were pretty close quarters, weren't they?
Absolutely.
To your observation, did Dr. Zarnik work as hard and as long as Dr. Chi and Stulpnagel?
No, there's a clear distinction between the work ethic between John Stulpnagel and Mark Chi and Tony and myself and Steve Aug at the Cardiff office. Tony would roll in about 9 and leave about 5. A lot of us were there at 7:30. We worked till about 7 at night, some on the weekends. So it was a clear difference in work ethic.
And would you say that Dr. Stulpnagel kind of dictated when the workday would end?
No, I mean it was, we were forming a company. There was a lot to do and we worked until people got tired, which was typically 12-hour day, 14-hour day. It was sort of what people wanted to do. It was a lot to do at the time. At no time did John Stulpnagel come around and say to me, Steve, you have to put in a 60-hour week. It's why we were there. We wanted to do this. It was a great opportunity.
And did people come and go as they pleased at Cardiff? Was Dr. Stulpnagel dictating when you arrived and when you left?
No. People came and go as they have things to do. I just moved out here, so I had to go and find an apartment and get set up and all this other stuff. So it was common practice just to come and go as you felt you needed to.
We've also heard testimony that Illumina moved to new facilities at Town Center Drive around September.
Uh-huh.
Of 1999, I believe. What did you have to do to prepare for the move to the new building?
Well, the tremendous amount of work you have to do. You just can't walk into a facility and expect things to be there. We had to organize vendor relationships to order chemicals and things we needed for the labs. We had to set up accounts, get certification from the banks that we had money in the bank so we could buy stuff from the chemical vendors. So we had that to do. We had to plan out all the things we needed to have in the laboratory. It's like setting up a kitchen, really. You need pots and pans and things to bake with. We do the same thing in chemistry. You have to make those lists, make sure those lists coordinated with the experiments you want to do. We had everything. We had to do everything from buying pencils and waste paper baskets to paper to chemicals, planning the experiments, writing plans of what we want to do. Everything from A to Z. So there was tons to do at the time.
To your observation, in terms of setting up the chemistry facility in the new building, who took care of that?
I was championing that at the time. There was no distinction at that time if it was chemistry or molecular biology or engineering. There are only a few of us. There was no distinction at that time in the company. It was basically to get the technology that was licensed up and running as fast as possible, and that was the goal.
Do you recall Dr. Zarnik doing any of the planning or strategic documents to get ready for the move to the new building?
No, I don't recall that at all.
And then we talked a little bit about the big room at the new facilities.
Uh-huh.
Do you recall Dr. Stulpnagel trying to do anything to hamper communication between the different groups of scientists?
I thought John thought it would be a good idea that we all be in the big room.
Do you recall that John Stulpnagel interviewed you after Steve Auger left to see what he could do to improve things at Illumina?
I think we had a conversation. I wouldn't call it an interview.
Do you recall during that discussion suggesting to Dr. Stulpnagel that there could be further kinds of meetings to foster communication within the company?
Yes. I suggested a venue of communication, the Wednesday noon seminars, or seminars where people would present what each group was working on. That way we would know what each group of people would be doing, and it would foster communication on that level also.
Did Dr. Stulpnagel agree with that suggestion?
Yeah, he encouraged me to start that.
Did you in fact do that program at Illumina?
Yes.
So would you say that over his tenure as chief scientific officer, Dr. Zarnik acted as the chief scientific officer in terms of the business development of Illumina's science efforts?
Object that there's no foundation for that, Judge.
Sustained. You can lay a foundation.
Did you have an opportunity to observe Dr. Zarnik's business development efforts on behalf of the chemistry applications of alumina?
At that time, I was fairly senior in the company, and being from the beginning of the company, I was kept informed of all the business development and where the company was going. The company was going in the genomics area. It was clear Dr. Zarnik was not an expert in the genomics area. He was an expert in essentially combinatorial chemistry, which is a drug design-based area, so he didn't have the expertise to actually do the development, the business development. And it was clear that Mark Chi, the VP of genomics, and John Stulpnagel had the connections we needed to develop the genomics aspect of the business at that time.
As part of the chemistry group, had you hoped that Dr. Zarnik would in fact propose chemical applications for Illumina's technology?
Absolutely. I didn't know why we weren't doing more of it. There were a number of areas we could be developing in the chemistry department. We could be developing assays to identify new drugs. A lot of companies do this. There are companies that are just out there screening new compounds with the potential of hitting on a new drug. That would be a beautiful application for our technology. I didn't understand why we weren't doing more of that.
Did you ever observe any member of senior management being disrespectful to Dr. Zarnik?
No, not disrespectful.
You saw a healthy scientific debate among the scientists and senior managers?
Yes, it's typical. You have a group of people that are very strong-minded about ideas, and there's going to be a debate. Sometimes they get very heated, but that's commonplace in science.
To your observation, did you perceive Dr. Zarnik as a fighter for the chemistry group?
No. Actually, Tony and I talked about that quite a bit. Tony admitted to me or confided in me he was not a fighter. That if I wanted to pursue ideas or if I had a disagreement with what was going on, I'd have to go that alone.
He was in essence saying, if you want to have a discussion or a debate with molecular biology, you're going to have to do that by...
Objection, leading.
Sustained.
So did you feel that you had to advocate positions for the chemistry group on behalf of the chemists?
Yes. People know I'm very vocal about my position, so that I had to stand on my own two feet to do that with the company at the time.
Did Dr. Zarnik tell you he had voluntarily taken on the position of research fellow?
I remember the day Tony had the meeting with Jay Flatley, and Tony came down. We went outside. We had a discussion of what went on. During that discussion, Tony told me he accepted a position of research fellow, and he was stepping down from CSO. And he thought it was a good idea just because David Barker was an expert in genomics. It seemed like a good idea at that time.
During that time period, did Dr. Zarnik connect his stepping down to research fellow as in any way connected to a concept that he was being discriminated against because of a medical condition?
No, it had to do with his essential efficiency of representing Illumina in the genomics area.
In fact, at that time, did you have the idea that Dr. Zarnik suffered from any kind of medical disability?
No.
Did you perceive Dr. Zarnik as a procrastinator?
Absolutely. Tony used to admit to it. We used to joke about it.
Let's put up Trial Exhibit 58, please. Do you recall that Dr. Zarnik was responsible for filing a grant application, a NIST-ATP grant application, in April of 1999?
Absolutely. The NIST grant application is a sizable grant. It would be a great source of revenue for the company at the time, so it was important that we be applying for these grants. They are on the order of millions of dollars. There was tremendous interest in getting this grant applied for and actually receiving it. So we talked quite a bit about the importance of the NIST grant and the business development of the company.
Had you personally had any experience in writing grant applications by this time?
Yeah, I've written two in grad school, and I wrote three at Illumina. One of the three at Illumina was funded.
So in your experience, how much lead time should you allow for preparing a grant application?
So for myself, I think you need at least 2 months to prepare well to write the grant application, have it reviewed by colleagues, get all the diagrams and things like that ready. So I'd say about a good 2 months.
Let's take a look at this exhibit, Trial Exhibit 58. It's an email from Dr. Zarnik to you, among others. Do you recall him enlisting your help on April 4th, 1999, to prepare the NIST ATP grant application?
Yes, I do.
And at the time you received this, did you think this was kind of late in the game to be getting started?
Absolutely. It came right before our weekend, and I had to come in on the weekend to get these diagrams ready for Tony so he could put them in the grant.
This one was on a Sunday. It was discussing the following week. So are you referring to the weekend after that where you had to prepare diagrams?
I think I'm trying to remember whether I came in on that Sunday to get the diagrams.
So do you recall the effort that you and others went through to help Dr. Zarnik get this grant application done on time?
Yeah, I mean, we provided support to get the grant out.
Dr. Zarnik did get it in on time?
Yes, he did. He pulled an all-nighter and got the grant written.
Did Dr. Zarnik ever draw your attention to the goals he was assigned as research fellow?
Yes, he did. As I understand it, reached by consensus between Jay Flatley, the CEO of the company at the time, and Tony showed me the goals.
By this time, you weren't reporting to him any longer, correct?
No, I was reporting to David Barker.
Was there any business reason for him to draw your attention to those goals that you know of?
No.
Let's put up Trial Exhibit 227, please. Do you know Dr. Golly Steinberg?
Yes, I do.
She's currently out on maternity leave.
Yes, she is.
Are you familiar with some work she did where she tried to demonstrate the feasibility of attaching two different oligos to beads as a binary decoding system?
Yes, what we're talking about is a chemical method where two pieces of DNA are actually attached to a bead. What that does is simplify the decoding process. There was two big concerns why we wanted to pursue that. First of all, it's a cost reduction for the company. It also allows us to decode many more things very efficiently. So it was very important that we pursue this avenue.
I think Dr. Barker tried to analogize putting two different oligos on a bead, sort of like giving human beings a first name and a last name. Is that a fair analogy?
Yes, it gives you two sets of identifiers.
So let me draw your attention to Dr. Zarnik's binary oligo encoding goal. Do you believe that Dr. Steinberg... First of all, did you have any involvement with Dr. Steinberg's experiments with binary encoding?
Yes, we were working on this under the Gene Expression Project, which I was supervising. The beads that were made chemically come to my group for analysis. My group does the testing of the beads or the decoding of the beads.
So when you are referring to my group, are you referring to the decoding group?
Absolutely.
So you referred to Gene Expression. So that's the group where they are trying to decode many greater numbers of bead types, correct?
Yes.
So take a look at Dr. Zarnik's binary oligo encoding goal. Did Dr. Steinberg actually do any of the things that are listed as Dr. Zarnik's research goals?
Yes, the first two, the goal of 30-day, the initial model system was decoding 16 things. So she produced that very quickly, actually. The next step was to scale that up to a higher complexity of things, to 96, and then up to hundreds of things. So Galley was working on these, on both of these complexity levels.
I know Illumina is a big place now, but do you have any idea whether or not Dr. Steinberg intends to further pursue the binary encoding project?
Absolutely. We have a team based on developing bead chemistry for bead expression. Galley is in that group, and I'm leading that group.
The intent is to decode greater numbers of bead types than the 30, 60-day goals listed there.
Absolutely.
What's the ultimate goal?
The ultimate goal is probably around 100,000 to 150,000 codes.
Were you aware that Dr. Zarnik was preparing for a January 2000 SAB meeting?
Yes, I was.
How did you become aware of that?
It was at the last moment. Typically, SAB meetings, Scientific Advisory Board meeting, where we have world-renowned experts come in and review the technology of the company to make sure we're pursuing our science as we should. It's sort of a board that oversees what's going on scientifically. So Tony was responsible for running these meetings. Typically, what you do is create a packet of information summarizing the science that's been done in the company. So this goes out beforehand to the Scientific Advisory Board members, so they can preview it and then come in when they visit the company to ask questions and, you know, either offer suggestions or correct us if they feel we're going to the wrong direction. So it's a very important package that goes out before the board for two reasons. It's very hard to get these people to meet because they're famous people and very, very busy. So we want to make that meeting very, very efficient. It's critical that they have the information before. So, Tony...
Were you expecting to be asked to prepare some materials for the SAB meeting?
Yes. Typically, what would happen is week before the meeting, we'd start preparing the board packet, as we called it. We assemble information, get it printed, sent out 2 or 3 days beforehand.
I know you said Dr. Zarnik was your boss, so you are uncomfortable to criticize him. But do you recall commenting to anyone else that Dr. Zarnik wasn't getting ready in time?
Actually, I confronted Tony why it was going on so late, because I knew it wouldn't be shipped in time. Tony told me he was going to wing it at the next meeting. I was basically insulted by that whole comment. To bring 10 or 12 people in that are famous in science and then wing it and try to get information out of them, I thought was a bad thing for Illumina. First of all, it ruins our reputation in the scientific community. It's a waste of our money also. So I mentioned this to Deborah Flamino, also in the conversation we had.
Your Honor, I'll move to strike that last bit of hearsay.
That he mentioned it to Deborah Flamino? Motion granted.
Do you recall after Dr. Zarnik announced he was stepping down to research fellow, do you recall having a sense that he probably wasn't going to be long for Illumina, around at Illumina, for much longer?
Yes. In my experience, and that's probably 10 years of real experience, first of all working at a large company, Ciba Geigy, a mid-sized company, and now a startup company, usually when people are taking these positions, they're looking at it as an exit position from the company.
I'll move to strike. Lack of foundation. Inadmissible.
Motion to strike granted.
Do you recall commenting that because of Dr. Zarnik's lackadaisical style, that Jay Flatley might want to terminate him?
Objection. Hearsay.
Sustained.
I don't think I have anything further. Thank you.